all styles of chairs and tables made to order from Peter Tree Chair Maker. Sue, you have been singing the praises of Peter Tree since we arrived this morning.
I have. This is a very special fella.
He is the Peter Tree.
This is the Peter Tree, yes. I'm obviously at Lincolnshire Show at the moment, and I've got a really nice range of chairs. Lots of the chairs are made out of Lincolnshire-grown timber. I've got chairs made of cherry, oak, ash, elm, yew, just all sorts of different timbers. And in fact, some of the woods I like to use unusual things as well. I mean, here I've got chairs with holly backsplats, because holly carves really, really nicely. I do use apple, laburnum, all sorts of unusual things.
Well, Sue is particularly keen to actually say just the quality is superb. Yes. And I'm thinking, actually, if Harrison Ford had maintained his work in carpentry, this is where he could have actually headed. But there
Thank
we are.
You, yes.
They seem sort of as objects of art. Can we actually sit on them?
Of course you can, yes.
Shall we sitting down?
Absolutely, yes.
So which one would you recommend, Peter? Should I actually take with us?
This one's... This is a book-matched burr elm seat. So if you can imagine a plank of wood and it's sawn down the middle and then opened out like a butterfly's wings, so each side of the chair, the grain matches. So this is burr elm seat. It's got burr elm little pads on the ends of the arms, and the rest of the chair is English elm. And it's a beautiful chair.
This is obviously one of the reasons, Sue, why when BBC Lincolnshire used to be a good station, with yourself, obviously. Clearly, Peter was a sort of star person, and obviously you're benefiting from the actual chair itself. How does it feel, Sue?
It's absolutely beautiful. The joints and the way that the wood is cut.
Sue, in a cherry rocking chair.
The way the wood is cut to make the most of the pattern is just beautiful. When did you start to craft wood?
I think, there was never a conscious time when I started, but my father had a fishing smack in Boston as a hobby, but my uncles also had boats, so my father had a lovely workshop full of bits of wood and things like that, and I just loved tinkering about with the wood then. And gradually, with being in close contact with boat building, And the shapes of boats and how wood is a living item, and you can mould it and sculpt it. You can make a boat, you can make a chair, you can make an aeroplane, you can make beautiful things out of wood.
So you've chosen chairs mostly, and there's lots of different sizes of stools.
Peter Tree Chair Maker,
yes.
So
that's right.
But have you ever thought about tinkering with other, making other things?
Yes, I do. I do make tables. I enjoy making tables, because obviously sometimes people come to me and they don't just want chairs, you know, they want a table as well. I've also made nice dresses for people, so there's a well-known tool maker in Lincolnshire, Ray Isles, and I've made him a really nice dresser, a really nice table. But because he's a tool maker and because of the carving, I love detail. I like making nice detail. So in the backs of my chairs, I sometimes carve images of flowers or little animals. But in Ray's, because he was a tool maker, I've done him a hedge knife and a mortise chisel and a little plumb bob just carved into the back.
Pray my husband doesn't hear about this, because he's going to be wanting you to do something like that.
He does. He likes hedge bait. I know he likes hedge bait. Yeah. But I think I love making nice chairs, but I love adding little bits of detail. So I like doing the carved backsplats. I like, if you see, there's a stall over there that I've looked at this stall and thought, well, I'd like to make something that looks like the steel plates, the way Titanic was riveted together. So this stall surface looks like it's steel plates with little rivets going in it, and
how long do these chairs, I mean, clearly depending on how much detail there are in them, on the average size chair, how long does it take you to do?
The one you're sat in now, that's the burr elm seated one, that would be about 5 days work just for one chair. And but I never make one chair at a time. What I'll try and do, I'll think of, say, three or four chairs that are ordered, or maybe one that I fancy making as well. And I'll perhaps have a whole day just turning legs, or making the spindles for the chairs, or making seats. So gradually, over 4 or 5 days, you're making all the components for, well, not all the components, but quite a lot of components for several chairs. And as it progresses, you gradually think, oh, well, that chair's nearly fit. If I have a good day at that, I can finish that one. So that's how I work. Which makes it then, you've finished one chair, but you've also got a good start on several others as well. So you're constantly rolling along in different states of manufacture.
So you work in many different woods here. We've got lots of different, you explained earlier, you've got lots of different sorts of woods here.
Yes.
If you could only pick one wood to work in, what would it be?
Oh, now that's unfair.
Desert Island wood.
I think it's got to be you.
Very personal sushi is.
Well, actually, a lot of people say yew tree because it specifies tree, but it is called yew. But yew is such a beautiful timber. It carves beautifully. It turns beautifully. It looks absolutely gorgeous. It's got this lovely sort of two-tone effect between the heartwood and the sapwood. So you've got a really nice, beautiful orangey brown heartwood and then the creamy coloured sapwood, and it all gradually mellows beautifully. It glues really nicely, it saws nice, it's got everything. Now the only downside, which actually I think is it's a tease really, because yew is a relatively small tree, but also it's got knots and fissures, so you've sort of really got to have your wits about you.
So it's quite a skill for you then to actually deal with it.
You've got to read the wood and get the best out of it.
And I noticed, Peter, we have a sign, Wanted Carving Tools. Oh, yes. Is carving tools a particularly villain of the piece?
No, not particularly.
Is there a reward?
There's I love carving, and perhaps people don't realise, but there's hundreds of different shapes of carving tools. And in the classified in what's known as the London pattern set of carving tools, which there isn't an exact figure, but probably in excess of 680 separate tools would make a complete set. Now, to get them all is very difficult. You could go out and buy new ones, but I actually prefer old tools because they're really... I love the idea that they've already had a life with somebody else.
I feel the same with cars, actually.
Well, it is, yeah. It's really nice. And so I've got a sign there saying Tools Wanted. And it's nice that sometimes, you know, they've had a life and they can come and live with me for a bit and help me carve.
PeterTreeChairs.co.uk, sorry, so just getting the social networking thing in there, is the website to actually go to. Therapy. I mean, I think that's one of the things that strikes me about what you've been talking about. Do you find it very therapeutic just actually going through the whole process of carving a chair?
It is. It's lovely. Yes, it's really nice to start with an empty space, if you like, and then gradually over a few days fill it with a really nice chair. And it's just so nice. It really is nice.
So if people want to get in touch with you for your carving tools, yes, or if they want to get in touch with you about chairs, things, where do they get in touch?
The best way is by phone. I mean, you can certainly look at my website, which is petertreechairs.co.uk. I do have an email, but I've never written.
Don't worry, let's go traditional snail mail. Telephone's so wonderfully 20th century, Peter. Let's go with it.
My telephone is 01529 488 413. And if I don't answer, it's because I'm making chairs, but leave me a message and I'll ring you back.
It's a genuine delight, Sue. Acknowledge you've got another little gem here. We'll hopefully catch up with you again in the near future. Do you tell the shows as well as Lincoln?
I'm booked to go to the CLA Game Fair.
Which is, of course, Harewood House.
It is Harewood House. Sherwood Forest, which is
very apt.
Which is lovely show. I do Beacon Hill Forest Festival. That's at August Bank Holiday, and that's primarily a wood fair, obviously, with it's the National Forest. I think that's probably it for... Elverston Castle. I shall be at Elverston Castle this year as well.
We must look to do a year in the life of Peter Tree Chairmaker. He would if he could, so he did, and he should.
Thank you ever so much.
There's a strange hypnotism, no matter whether it's the Great Yorkshire Show, whether it's the Lincolnshire Show, year in, year out, whether it's Stuart or Richard, we're drawn to the sheep show. Sue, this is your first time you've actually seen Stuart, our New Zealander, with his sheep show. Your thoughts?
I grew up on a farm. On a sheep farm. I have never, ever seen sheep do this before. I am absolutely gobsmacked.
As I said yesterday, and I keep saying, Gary Barlow could learn so much from this group.
Well, daddy dancing, sheep dancing. They're actually very talented.
Nobby's on his way.
Yeah, I think Nobby, the Suffolk Ram's probably doing his best, shaking his hooves, yes. That's unbelievable.
And his dog and duck show, which we're going to see later, is apparently equally as good.
Strictly Come Dancing, eat your heart out.
As a quick reminder, you're listening to the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition on location with Sandside Broadcasting and Siren FM at the Lincolnshire Show, the 131st Lincolnshire Show. Sue Royce and Alex Leftwick on reporting duties, and we're just enjoying once again the fabulous Sheep Show with Stuart from New Zealand.
I know you do.
Inevitably, the Sheep Show, as we just said, Sue, we were watching it, an absolute highlight. Sue, it's your first ever experience of Stuart the Sheep Shearer.
I'm blown away. I'm totally blown away as a farmer's daughter. I can't believe it. It's brilliant.
So there we are, official technical thumbs up.
Wonderful to hear. And it's lovely, this farmer's daughter, to get so lovely energy from that. So thank you very much. That's great.
Do you know, I mean, Terry the Texel, I never knew. I mean, my father breeds pedigree Dutch Texels. I never knew they could do that. And he's a bit of a mover, particularly a body wiggler.
Yeah, it's brilliant. He's very good at it, isn't he? And he's very keen. But it was first show of the morning. And all my sheep, I mean, they were going off cue a little bit because I usually do it one by one. But they were all so excited to dance. They were actually dancing it way before I even got to them. And Terry was, fired right up today.
At what point did you discover that your sheep could do this?
Well, the Sheep Show has been going on about 21 years. Last year was its 21-year birthday. So, you know, we started off without that, obviously. It was more just informal, very straight-laced kind of information show. And then as the years went on, we realised the sheep were getting more excited about things, and we kind of took advantage of that excitement. And now we turned it into a little bit of their favourite part of the show, I think, for the sheep, is their dance moving.
And the attendees.
Yes.
Well, yeah. When you look at the audience, what part of the show do you think they really respond to the most?
Yeah. Obviously, the highlight's going to be the sheep dancing. But you know, let's say 100 people watching. There's going to be a percentage of them will get something out of it. I can always look at the crowd and say, well, there's 20% who're just interested in the facts. They're not really into the side of the humour. Or there's like 40% who're just there for a bit of a giggle, and the other, 30% are just
probably shocked. Media people wanted to interview.
Yeah, no, just in shock, and they're walking past and going, what the heck is sheep doing on stage? And I get a lot of people just like, I didn't even know sheep were half interested, let alone the background and the history of it all as well.
I mean, I knew sheep could be trained because we've trained our sheep from being quite little lambs. If we're bringing them here to shows, you know, they're trained on the lead. And I used to show when I was little, we used to have the job of holding the butcher's lambs. And they used to wiggle about a fair bit, but you could get them trained to do it. But I had no idea you could train them to dance.
Yeah, either did I, really. It kind of just happened.
Stuart, Sue's husband Dylan, currently in Romania, but also an MA Community Radio graduate, which is wonderful, and a BBC Lincolnshire host as well of times past. But apparently he has an interesting way of shearing the sheep. Would you like to? Because you have a sheep in the Rouse household, I believe?
Yes.
How does he do it?
Water finds its own level. I have a small flock of Dutch Texel sheep, which graze off our small holding, and we also use them for meat. But of course, because they're Texels, they need to be shorn, as you quite rightly say. They need to have the wool off. And my husband went on a wool course to get them sheared. And you make it look very, very easy. It is not as easy as it looks. And I think Dylan initially thought, oh, this will be easy. Somebody will just teach me how to do this at basic level and it'll be fine. We'll borrow my father's sheep shears and it'll be lovely. And I think he did it for 2 years before he went, nah, I'm not doing this anymore. And then he gets scissors and I look away.
Yeah, this is a very slow, painful way of doing it. Not for the sheep, but just time-wise.
It's not going to get you sort of 3 or 4 shows a day with scissors, is it, really?
Yeah, no, you'd be there for half a day, I think, and probably end up looking like a poodle.
No good commercially whatsoever. Central
he stuck at it. Well, he stuck at it. I mean, I give my hats off if he can do it. Look good for him, but yeah, no. I mean, the world record is just over 20-something seconds or close to 30 seconds. The average around 50 seconds, the good ones. But there is dedication. There is a 3-month period of pain, you know, where your body keeps shrinking at night, and till the body stops shrinking, if you shear for 3 months, and then it becomes much more flexible, and then the pain starts to subside after 3 months of shearing.
And those statistics that you gave us in terms of people who are professional sheep shearers in Australia, Australia, New Zealand. I mean, just run them by them once again for the listener. I mean, they're phenomenal, really.
Yeah, well, where I come from, an average shearer can do 300 to 400 sheep a day. The world record's 750-something sheep. We grew up with it, you know, second nature for us. But over here, you've got more sheep than New Zealand now. You've got 34 million, which is about doubled New Zealand population. You've got more sheep than any other country in Europe. And you guys rely on us foreigners to come over because of the numbers we can do. And you are sitting on a bit of a time bomb. I see it into the future that there's less of us doing it, even in our own countries, and there's a lot less of you guys doing it. And
with scissors, it's not going to help
no,
at all.
No. And that's it. You know, if you, and by the way, you know, as you know, it's law to shear sheep, but otherwise you can be done for cruelty to animals. So I don't know what's going to happen. You either have to get rid of your numbers of sheep, 34 million is a lot of sheep to shear, or you have to start doing free schooling for shearers to really encourage the students to come on, because Scotland's already doing it. They're leading the way. Scotland's already got free education for shearers, free courses to get more people shearing in Scotland. They've seen it, but England and Wales haven't done anything like that. They still have to, they charge quite a lot to get young shearers to do a course, and they're just going to, they're going to not see in the future very clearly, because it's just going to be in a big lot of trouble soon.
And this is the problem that sort of small breeders like myself and my father, this is the problem that we've got, is trying to get hold of a shearer that's relatively close by that can come and do the sheep. But because there's been such demand, you can find that it's sort of July, August time, by which time it's too late. You need to do it.
You've lost a couple of sheep with fly strike, and it's devastating. I mean, fly strike's the worst thing you've ever seen. It's like what nightmares are made of. And people just don't realise. And this weather is perfect fly strike weather. It's amazing. Muggy and the flies will just bury it in. It's not a pretty picture, but it's a massive problem over here.
Stuart, we will be seeing you later on today for the Way of the Dog. We missed it yesterday because we were sorting out various other species. That's where your heart is, as we've said, to do the wonderful natural dog training. The book, of course, is still available, Way of the Dog, and indeed self-published, so get out there and get one straight away if you're not at the Lincolnshire Show. What can we expect there with your dogs and ducks?
Yes, hopefully it will go pretty smoothly. I've just found out yesterday, my first show, I've got new ducks, you see. I get lots of Indian running ducks given to me, males, because they kind of can't lay eggs and so on. So I trained my dogs on them, and I took a new bunch out to me here today, and I didn't realise, but we've got a rogue duck who just doesn't
a rogue duck.
Yeah, so that's going to be fun to watch. He actually ignores the dogs completely and just walks into them, so it's like a suicide mission he's on, and the dogs are thinking, hang on, this shouldn't be happening. So he put me to my test yesterday, and I'm sure he's going to do the same today, so that's going to be looking out for that.
Duck a l'orange for Sunday dinner then?
Yeah, something like that. No, I wouldn't do that. I love my ducks.
After due refreshment in the press tent, Sue and myself have made our way here in tandem, actually, with Minty and Jackie and her three canine companions, including, of course, Toffee the Ace Guide Dog. They've gone off to watch the sheep man do his business. We will be seeing Stuart, of course, the dog and duck man, perform in the arena that we're currently sitting right at the front of, and just awaiting Savage Skills, Sue. Action Sports Tour. And as the commentator is actually saying, we should prepare to be amazed by mountain bike display team extraordinaire. Your thoughts?
Well, it certainly looks like what they're putting out in the ring at the moment is going to lead to quite an interesting display. They've got, I suppose, almost what you'd expect to see in a skate park being erected in the middle of the arena. So let's see what they do with that.
A year ago, of course, we were watching the delights of equine gymnastics on Jive Pony, who are performing for the second year here. Jive Pony are taking a break from the Lincolnshire Show this year, of course, so we've got a different kind of technique being used here in the Countryside Arena. Weather update for those folk who are listening to this on a podcast, so it's probably past its day, but what the hey, we know you appreciate our weather reports. What would you say, Sue?
I would say it's warm, a little muggy, slightly overcast, but actually generally pretty good for the second day of Lincolnshire Show.
Right, okay, Sue, we promised you with Savage Skills an absolute tour de force of excitement and joy. We are clapping like whirling dervishes. He says once again, you enjoyed it, did you not?
I did very much, yes. There's a lot of airtime going on there.
Oh, fantastic. And we now have the legend who is Ben Savage amongst us. Ben, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks. How about you?
Delighted. I mean, but you know, the sort of stuff that you guys were doing, quite phenomenal. And the last time I saw you, I'm pretty sure, was at Countryside Live last year when you were actually doing it on concrete as well. So first question, concrete or grass, which do you prefer?
Oh, for me personally, doing the trials, it doesn't really make much difference, to be honest. But the mountain bike riders, they're pretty fussy and their legs are generally quite scrawny, so they struggle to get the speed on the grass. They'd probably prefer to be on the concrete.
Makes sense. Sue?
How long have you been doing this then, Ben?
I've been riding trials since I was 5, so a very long time now. I haven't always...
I thought you've aged rapidly, really.
Yeah, I'm not doing very well for my age, but that's another story. It just takes lots of practice. As a kid, I was not really into school that much. As soon as I got home, I'd be on my bike before school. It's just what I loved doing back then, and I still love doing it now.
Southside Broadcasting runs a semi-regular podcast called On Your Bike, named obviously after the Yorkshire Tour de France thing with Tony Manila from Team Watt Cycle. That's competitive cycling. It is a growing sport, and it's kind of just built from the Olympics. We had obviously the sensational Bradley Wiggins doing his stuff recently, a record award winning thing. Where do you pitch yourself in that whole sort of cycling world?
Compared to Bradley Wiggins, I guess I'm probably at the bottom.
You got the same sort of beard. It's all good.
It's very different, really. The road cycling and mountain biking is so accessible for everyone, especially after the boom of the Olympics. And the bikes are relatively cheap to get into it. But the extreme side of things, it's pretty difficult to find a location to do it safely. And because it's so much harder than just pedaling along the flat ground, getting fitter, it's pretty hard to get into.
You were doing some pretty spectacular tricks out in the arena earlier on. Which one is your favourite trick?
I really enjoy the bunny hop, which is going over the bar. It's always a little bit of a challenge.
You made it second time round, though.
Yeah, well, believe it or not, that was all just an act.
No!
But yeah, please keep that to yourselves. It's just me and the bar, and all of the other moves in the show sort of affixed, whereas the bar is sort of up to us how hard we push ourselves.
Well, last year, in fact, the last couple of years, we've been having the joys of equine gymnastics with Jive Pony, of course. Young ladies actually doing gymnastics on horseback. I think Savage Skills has certainly matched that, if not exceeded it. In fact, I'm thinking we should really go for a fusion of both, really. Horses and Savage Skills. Would you be up for that, Ben?
Yeah, it sounds pretty cool, but I think you can try it first.
That sounds fair enough to me.
And finally, a safety point, actually. One of the things I get quite concerned about when we're doing the midweek drive shows on Siren and various other places, the number of folk who still will cycle without crash helmets on. Would you like to just do a safety message on that, Ben, and say it's not big, it's not clever?
No, I do agree with that. I suppose it's each to their own. If they don't want a helmet, they're taking the risk. But personally, I wouldn't go out, be it on the road or even down to the shops or anything, without putting a helmet on. So yeah, if you have got one, don't worry about thinking it doesn't look cool, put it on, go for it.
It does, you know, that's the important thing. And a quick mention for your colleague here who's sitting coolly to checking things out. Your name, sir, is?
James Thorne. I'm the MC for Savage Skills.
And James, that moment when the microphone actually just died and Sue and I looked at each other, so have we let them down again? Was it a moment where you thought, what am I going to do, just reject my voice?
Well, there's two options. You either run off and get more batteries, or you perform the show through the medium of dance. So I went with the first option. But those things happen.
Medium of dance, eh? Well, thank you. Guys, Savage Skills, no relation to Rob Savage, the well-groomed footballer, ex-footballer, I presume?
Yeah, he's actually my stepdad.
Really?
No.
No. Almost had me then, Ben. Almost had me, but not quite. SavageSkills.co.uk. Where do you go to after this?
We are going to an event in North Wales this evening called Woodfest. We'll be there for 3 days for everything to do with wood, I guess.
Well, Sue will be busily tweeting you and doing all the rest of the bits and pieces. Presumably you're on Facebook and Twitter and all the rest of the bits and pieces too.
Yeah, you can find us on all of the social media at Savage Skills. It'll be brilliant to see all the photos.
Very skilled hillbillies. I didn't do much for school, so I kind of left early. At 15 years old, I had 4 horses, 16 sheepdogs, and I lived in the Southern Alps. You might have seen the mountains on Lord of the Rings and stuff like that. I was programmed to dominate our animals with fear. But luckily, very quickly, watching the animals themselves and having a large pack, I learned how they communicated. So now I dominate with understanding. We have to dominate our dogs and our horses, otherwise we have major problems. Okay, but we can dominate in this way they understand. So, let's get on with it. Let's just touch on my most 2 common questions I get asked. So I'm going to do that, and then I'll move on to the ducks and the dogs. Hi, sir. I've got a perfect dog. Oh, he's lovely. 98% gorgeous. It's just one little thing's problem. It's just when I'm walking down the road, he likes to eat other dogs. Probably the most common question I get asked. Aggressive dogs on leads. Okay, so I'm just going to show you, firstly, how that can come about. Because dogs don't, hard to believe, I might, for some people, the dogs don't do that to annoy us. They don't, they're gonna, I'm going to pull you down the road just to upset my pack leader. I'm going to be aggressive dogs coming towards me just to annoy them. They don't do that. They're not in their genes. Okay, they do a job. When they think they've got a job in their head, that's what they want to do. And if we haven't put boundaries and kind of foundations in our training, then they'll find a job if you don't give them one, and then that's it. So let me just show you. If you take anything out of this show, take this. Energy first, body language second, voice commands. Those three have to be in line, otherwise the dog doesn't take you seriously. I'm a lovely young lady. I'm holding a chihuahua, walking down the road. La 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 la. Look up the road and I see a guy with a white singlet full of tattoos, and he's holding a drooling Rottweiler. All of a sudden, my energy drops. Oh my God. My hand gets a bit nervous. I start to wrap the lead around my hand. I pull the chihuahua towards me. It's okay, baby. Mummy's got you. I won't let him eat you. That's what she's thinking. You want to know what your chihuahua's thinking? It's a pack animal. So it's got jobs to do in a pack. So you're walking down the road. Your energy drops. The dog senses it. What's wrong, Mum? What is it? What do you see? And so now on high alert. Then she becomes a weak pack leader. She starts to shrivel. She becomes nervous. And now your dog has got no other job. It's on a short lead. It's like a cornered animal. It has to protect the pack. It's all right, Mum. I'll get him. I'll rip his legs off! So we accidentally, not meaning to, put a lot of our problems in our dog by just not understanding the messages we send our dogs. It's very important, the signals we send our dog. They read our energy first, body language second, voice commands. I'm just going to touch on one more before we get to the exciting part of the show with the ducks. I get a lot of nervous dogs coming to me, and it's heartbreaking, obviously. They've had a hard life, they're just scared of everything. So this is just one, I'm just going to use one example. Let's say thunder. Look at the dog, it's shaking terribly. Terrified of thunder. So what do we do as humans? We do the same for our children. We reassure the dog, it's okay, it's like daddy's here, shh. It's okay, don't worry about it. We'll get through it. What's wrong with that? Well, I'm not here to say what's wrong with it, what's right with it. All I'm going to say is what I've learnt. Okay? By pumping energy into a scared dog, we're feeding that mindset. Very quickly, when I backpacked around the world, I learned one thing. What you feed, you create. By pumping energy into a scared dog, you're keeping it in that mindset longer. So what would I do if I had a nervous, scared dog? Well, I try and desensitize it. So I set up a scenario at home so I can control the situation. Just 5-10 minutes. I got my mate outside with 2 bits of 4x2. I have now thunder, the dog shaking terribly. I don't crouch down and make out with him. I stand tall. I'm trying to reassure the dog from the pack leader there's nothing to worry about. It's too late. The dog's already terrified of thunder or banging. So now I've got to get it out of that mindset. It's in tunnel vision. All it can hear and think about is the banging. So I give it a bit of a poke. I bring it back to me. I get a tennis ball, its favourite ball. I throw it. We do some high energy now. We grab the ball and we bring it back. It's still flinching every time it hears the bang. But after 15 minutes, throwing the ball back and forwards, by the end of it, it's hardly flinching at all. And it's banging louder and faster. It's desensitising these animals from their problems, not hiding them away and thinking they'll go away. Not just rewarding good behaviour and ignoring bad behaviour. Habits, once they're in there, it's like a trigger. They don't just disappear on their own. We've got to desensitize those triggers. You can't stop a bullet, but you have to attack the trigger. And the only way to attack a trigger is set up a scenario and catch it at the right time. It doesn't take any more than 15 to 20 minutes. Believe it or not, in a few weeks, you've conquered about 80% of your dog problems. All right, let's get to something a bit more exciting for you folks. If you're not dog lovers,
interesting line there. Stuart Barnes is who we'll be listening to. Sue, your thoughts on what we've heard so far?
He talks a lot of sense. I like the way that he's talking his way through how the dog thinks and ways that people can deal with nervous dogs or dogs that have issues and how we as humans can, without thinking about it, actually feed our dog's fear. He's clearly very knowledgeable about what he's talking about, but the ducks have just turned up and they're just fabulous. They're going to absolutely wow the crowd.
And I have to say, the sun is suddenly scorching once again.
Yes, I was just thinking, oh, maybe a bit of sun cream.
I'll get the sun cream for you, Sue.
Thank you, Ashley.
And so our period of time for the 131st Lincolnshire Show is beginning to draw to a close. So it's been a privilege co-presenting with you today. What have your particular high spots been of your Lincolnshire Show 2015?
Well, I think it's got to be meeting all the old friends and seeing what they're all up to. Having a look at the new Epic Centre and the new members' enclosure, which thus far I have never been to. And I think certainly as far as displays are concerned, it would be hard to beat the Dog and Duck. I think Stuart doing the Dog and Ducks was absolutely fantastic. And of course the RAF Falcons that we've just seen parachuting into the arena were pretty spectacular too.
Certainly Stuart Barnes, I think, did himself not only with the Sheep Show but with the Dog and Ducks scenario. I'll give a little mention for the Savage cycling display team because I think they did extremely well. I mean, some of those stunts I would not recommend anybody try without crash helmets at least.
No, not at all. They were a new addition this year, I think, and they certainly went down very well.
And of course, earlier in the day, we spoke to lots of wonderful foodie people who were doing delightful things, not only Neil Curtis, but of course our top Brocklehurst prize and more from that perspective. Plus, of course, the cheese person. So great stuff from there. And yet, of course, if people are saying, yes, but that's what about the Muse shopping environment? What about the Women's Institute? Well, frankly, we haven't had time to do that.
No, it's been a great shame, but really, it's a two-day event because there really is so much to see. It's well worth coming for the 2 days, and certainly next year I will endeavour to be coming on both days because I've enjoyed it so much.
Well, what a suggestion, actually, that maybe it's reaching the stage where, a bit like the Great Yorkshire Show, it needs to go to 3 days. What do you think?
I think that would be fantastic if Amelia could kind of push the organising committee for 3 days. I think that would be lovely.
Amelia, as well as giving birth, you should be listening to this whilst you're probably the waters are breaking, so, you know, nice to work through that podcast. And in any shape or form, we wish you well. Plus, of course, Jane Southall and the rest of the team have done superbly well. Chloe Middleton. And, of course, Chris, of course, who University of Lincoln graduate, who I think is heading his first ever Lincolnshire Show as far as the whole thing is concerned. And it's been a joy for me as well with not only yourself, Sue Royce, but also the wonderful Chloe Baker and Ed Wellman, of course, has been doing fine stuff there. Sebastian Engington Cole, some of our sirenists, Anthony Kafferke, and of course, the one and only McDonald, whose first name, of course, is Eva. That's it. It's a wrap for us here at the 2015 Lincolnshire Show. Would you like to say goodbye, Sue?
Goodbye.